It's the Three Wise Men, WSN's podcast. We trust that you, our listeners and viewers, had a great holiday season and a great start to 2025. Gentlemen, happy holidays. I hope everything's going great in 2025.
Happy 2025, Jamie. I spent my break going through that dictionary that Nate gifted me. It was a great break.
We really expanded the vocabulary, didn't we? I spent my break
watching Nate's family on Facebook enjoy the warm temperatures.
The crew.
While I was freezing.
Yeah. You weren't freezing. Didn't you go out west?
Weren't
you in the desert?
Like 50.
It was a desert. What are you talking about?
Hey, how was Rick Springfield? That was a great concert.
That was great. It was great.
That's awesome. That's good for you.
My wife loved it. All right, gentlemen, let's get right to it. It's the Diamond Dave Bowen best thing we saw all week. Let's start with you, Miles.
Oh, boy, I have three of them, so bear with me here because it was a great week. I'll start with last Monday. Had an opportunity to call OG and Defiance with Kelsey Beimer, the Princess of Positivity. She was on color, did a great job. But Dre Singleton for Defiance. If you haven't seen this young man play yet, Defiance kind of been under the radar, right? They were 8-0, just lost over the weekend, but they still having a great season. But Dre Singleton, I don't know if anybody has a first step that's more explosive than him, and he got a baseline inbound at the end of the game, went high glass, and made the game winner. It was an unbelievable game, great finish. Dre Singleton was outstanding. That was really my first time getting to see him play, and he's an outstanding guy. Cam Elwer for Shawnee, against Shawnee, hit the buzzer beater with a three to put them ahead. Shawnee did have a chance, but Cam Elwer was kind of frustrated that night. Shawnee came out in a box and won. It was the night after he set the record for DSJ for most points ever, and he was a little bit frustrated throughout. But you know what? When it came to crunch time, there was a guy in his face, Ojo for Shawnee. Didn't matter. Made a three to put them ahead and win the game. He was absolutely fantastic. And then Kelsey Beimer, our own Kelsey Beimer, had her first post-game interview. She got to interview Dre Singleton, and it was fun to watch. It was a proud dad moment for all of us.
She's grown up so big.
She handled the interview with them, even got him to do the half-court shot at the end.
She's so cute.
If you pay real close attention, you can see her hand shaking a little bit because she's nervous, but she got through it.
Those are the moments.
Those are. It's like the first step.
Core memories.
Those are the moments.
So those are.
You got pictures.
I got a lot of pictures. I shared them with mom. It was great because, you know, you get to see someone make that extra step, right? She was really nervous, you could tell, but she did a great job. So Cam Elwer, great, unbelievable. Dre Singleton, Kelsey Beimer, those were the best things.
Yeah, I mean, it's great when you make a show sheet for us every week, which is so helpful because we get organized and get through this. And it's great because you always put your best things on there, so we have a chance to make sure we don't double up. Except when we start the show and you decide to add one that's already on my sheet, but it's cool. It doesn't bother me. I'm fine.
Oh, you had Kelsey on there too.
I'm fine. Listen, like you mentioned, last week was actually a pretty light sports week for me. I was out of the country, took the family, we went on a cruise, we were in the Bahamas enjoying the sun. So that was one of my favorite things. The sun in the Bahamas is just different than everywhere else, mainly because it means I'm not here in the cold and rain like you guys were. My ring went off every now and then because we had someone taking care of the house, and I could just see how miserable it was here. And then I went out and I, put a hat on and sunglasses and sunscreen because I was getting burnt standing on the ship because of that bright sun. That was one. I did get back Saturday pretty late, but I did have a chance to see a little bit of sports, and it was that St. John's Shawnee game you were mentioning.
Amazing game.
And for me, it was that Delphi St. John's comeback. It was everything that you had just said, Miles. Yeah. For me, it was watching Cam Elwer get that basketball, not have a lot of space, be able to create, no hesitation, all the confidence in the world, knocking down that three-pointer. That was a team that was down 22-2 at one point in that game. Shawnee came out, just absolutely blitzed them, but they worked their way back. The defense clamped down. The offense got going. And as we are so used to seeing at this point, when the time came, Cam Elwer hits a big shot, wins it for St. John's. Just a fantastic effort by them.
It was kind of ho-hum, wasn't it? Like, you expect him to do it. Like, oh, yeah, I hope he'll
play. Well, and it was so nonchalant. Like, he gets it. He just kind of goes to his right. Ojo's on him, big, long kid. Didn't play bad defense. And Cam just kind of stood there and was just like, I guess I'll shoot now. And then shot and made the three. And, I mean, there was really nothing leading up to it. There was nothing, like, crazy. It wasn't a catch and shoot. It wasn't coming off of a screen. It was just like, yeah, I'll shoot. And he did, and he made it, and they win. So
Diamond Dave Bowen, who I did the game with, he made a great point. Cam Elwer is just one of those guys that he thinks he's the best player in the state. And you can tell, right? You interviewed him today on the radio, and you could tell, That guy, he just has ultimate confidence, right? Mm-hmm. And if he was maybe 2-3 inches taller, probably going to Duke, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
He is that good of a player.
I mean, he doesn't get a lot of the credit he deserves because of his size, and that is criminal because it that is. There's a reason that he thinks he's the best basketball player in the state. Because he can back that up. He might be the best basketball player in the state.
He's an assassin.
I asked him today on the radio. I said, what was it like when they came out in that box and won? And his response, he didn't even hesitate. He goes, I've seen it before.
Yeah.
I'm good. He just side attacked it. I went after it, which is great. So my thing, guys, is I did the Shawnee Coldwater game Friday night. Really, really good game. We talk about the big three from Shawnee, Trevick, and Beckett, and Jagger. We don't talk a lot about Damalo Ojo. Ooh. You want to talk about an athlete? I'm going to tell you, fellas, this kid is 6'4". He runs the floor. He had a dunk the other night, and it was the fastest dunk I've ever seen. He runs the floor. He catches it at the foul line, and he brings it up and curls it behind his head, and it was incredible. I'm not kidding you. He had a dunk the next night. I don't think the kid gets enough credit. Now, I don't mean that he doesn't, you know, get credit, because he does get credit, but he just goes about his business. He is an unsung hero of that team. That team is loaded. I know they lost to Delphi St. John's. I know they've got a couple losses. I'm telling you, fellas, come the end of March, that is going to be the toughest team to knock out of the tournament.
Tremendous rebounder, great defender. Yeah. Nate mentions his length. It's unbelievable. Loose balls. He is that guy that does everything for them.
You know, I've been around that Shawnee program for a while because of my son and him going to school. I've done a lot of games. I've seen Damola since he was in seventh grade, and you know, he missed a year of basketball in junior high. He comes back. The basketball player that he has grown into, he doesn't get enough credit. This is a kid who is knowing nobody's radar. He wasn't thought of as this up-and-coming player that they couldn't wait to get in the program. He starts last year. He's seventh, eighth off the bench. He slowly starts moving his way up. He becomes the sixth man. Even coming into the season, nobody was talking about Damola Ojo as a starting five in this lineup that has so much expectation for Shawnee until tip-off comes and Coach Triplett sends out his starting five, and it's, wait, Damola's on there? Maybe it's a matchup thing, right? Like, And then you watch him play, and you're like, absolutely not. This kid has turned himself into a fantastic basketball player, one of the best guys in this area defense-wise. You know, he's still growing into it. You still see some of those mistakes, but it's because he hasn't had a lot of varsity time. He's getting better. I've seen the coaching staff working with him on the side when he gets frustrated, when he has those off games. They pull him. They talk to him. They're working on him. He's a very coachable kid. He reminds me a lot of, if you guys remember what was the Chicago Bulls documentary that they did, the 10-parter on Netflix. Yeah. I forget the name of it now, right?
Oh, where Michael Jordan said, and I took that personally.
Right, where they documented that 97, that last run with the Bulls, right? It reminds me a lot of how he's grown up, of when they were talking about Scottie Pippen and that all of a sudden that just that athleticism shot out of him, right? Like he was a very undersized, underrated kid. And then all of a sudden he came back. His wingspan was 6'6". He was tall. He was lengthy. He could do everything. And Ojo's really developing into that kind of player right before our eyes.
Yeah, he didn't start the game I broadcast last weekend, and he came off the bench. There was no pouting. There was no. It didn't matter. That kid can come off the bench. He can start. It doesn't matter. I loved watching him play.
When I was broadcasting that game on Saturday against DSJ, and I hope Evan Skillager's feeling better. I'm glad he was sick because I got to do the game for him.
Second choice because he asked me first.
But when he was out of the game, I kept saying to myself and on air, they got to get Ojo back on the floor, get him off the bench, get him back on there because he was such a difference maker.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, let's take a look at some of the WSN basketball games this week, and we have got a plethora of them. Okay, that's a line from the Three Amigos.
I like it. I like it.
Let's take a look. First, a girls game. Columbus Grove at Ottawa Glandorf. Our own Mark Shine and Scott Magg on the call. Columbus Grove comes in 11-1. Their only loss is to Ottaville this year. Ottawa Glandorf comes in undefeated. Surprise, surprise. Mm-hmm. Guys, this is the matchup of the year so far in girls basketball.
Yeah, until Saturday probably.
Right. No, 100%, yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
I was going to say that.
Look, this is going to be a great game, but I don't know know if Columbus Grove is going to be able to rebound enough, right? OG is going to really do a great job on the glass. What a matchup, though, with Ockmoody against Erford. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, you know, two of the tops in Northwest Ohio. Keep an eye on Madison McKee, the 6'2 sophomore for OG. If she is playing a big part in this game, that's going to be three really big rebounders for OG, and I'm not sure Columbus Grove can match up with that inside, sure. And I think that's where OG has an advantage. We all know how good Ockmoody is. She's good every single time, so you know she's going to deliver 20-plus points, but how else do they score against a high-powered OG team?
You know, this is one of those games where the price of admission will be worth it to watch that matchup between Ockmoody and Erford. That is going to be – I can't wait to see how those two go after each other, how they play each other. They both have been playing varsity minutes from the moment they got into high school. They have a ton of time on the floor. They are so good. And, you know, to kind of be able to watch this, you know, final time these two will be on the floor together going after each other, it's going to be a fantastic game.
Guys, game two is Kenton at Bath. Myself and Darren Gilbert on the call. Kenton comes in at 8-2. Bath is 4-6. I want to say this about Kenton, guys. This is a perfect setup of when you take a lot of freshmen and sophomore and go with
them. Let them grow.
Yep, let them grow. And that's exactly what Kenton's done. And they are 8-2. They are having a fantastic year. Bath right now, 4-6. Not Bath standards. They are 3-3 in the last six games. But still, it's Bath girls basketball, which is always a juggernaut.
But more importantly, 3-0 in the WBL.
Exactly.
So this is a huge, kind of a knock them out game if Kenton loses, because they'd be 2-2 in the WBL. Must win for them. Five in a row they won, averaging around 52 points while they're doing that. And you said Kenton, with the young kids, have watched them grow.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of what Bath is doing this year, right? They're playing a lot of young bodies. I think if this is one of those games that gets up to the 50s, that favors Kenton. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think this is one of those things, too, where, you know, year after year after year, we know how good this Bath program is and what they're capable of doing. You know, you talk about kind of a down year, right? You're 4-6, but they're still 3-0 in conference play. They're still going hard in that WBO. If you're Kenton, though, you have to look at it and say, hey, listen, we've let these players grow. We've kind of, you know, developed. We're ready for this moment. And this is how you test yourself, is against a program like Bath. Mm-hmm. If you think that you're going to take that step, this is the game where you have to show that you're going to take that step.
Yeah. Guys, game three, Ottawa Glandorf at Elida, varsity boys contest. Our own Randy Roberts and Miles Holiday on the call. Ottawa Glandorf comes in at 2-7. Their last win was Triway just this last weekend. Elida comes in 6-5. They lost to a really good Coldwater team. We'll talk about Coldwater later. I like Elida in this one just because of those guards. They're so good. You know, I like those guards.
Yeah, Zori Island and Amari Wash. And of course, we talked to Marcus Hill after one game against Allen East.
Marcus Hill.
There's just nobody more athletic than that guy. He contributes. He had a rough night shooting last week, but he still contributed. Very athletic group. But Parker Krim, 12 offensive rebounds last week.
When he gets great position.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And I'm telling you, if he could just settle down and finish on those offensive rebounds, the kid's going to be a WBL player, because he gets so many offensive rebounds, but not putting them in. Much different story, but Parker Krim was just a monster, and it's going to be a lot of fun because we all know OG, they love to attack the glass as well, right? Now, they're 2-7. Don't be fooled by that.
They
play lights out, difficult, hard, and their schedule is crazy. Mm-hmm. Starting to get some contributions. We all know about Big Toe Tomazos, right? He's going to get you double digits. Fortman's a guy that can score, but the guy I really like, Rolls-Royce Ellerbrock, he had a big night last time I had him, gotten double digits. He can shoot up from the three. If they make their threes, they got a chance against Elida. If they don't, Elida's going to run.
I think, to me, the big difference maker here is going to be that this game is being played at Elida and not Ottawa Glandorf.
Yeah, good point.
Ottawa Glandorf, a little bit of a smaller of a court, it really helps that type of defense that OG wants to play. If you can disrupt those guards from Elida, that leads to those turnovers, and I think that would have benefited Ottawa Glandorf. Being at the field house, though, with a little bit more space to operate, this is an Elida team that when they are clicking, and when Zori Island is on it, and when Amari Wash is on it, and you got Marcus Hill contributing, and Parker Krim down low, and you got all of, and when this team is on the same page, they can play with any team in this area. I've watched them. They played possession for possession with Spencerville earlier this season. When they're on, this is a really good team. Their biggest problem has been consistency. They're still searching for that, being able to do it night in and night out. Now, you're right. Their schedule has been brutal to begin this season. Mm-hmm. And, you kind of hope as a coach that, hey, we may have taken some losses. You know, we had a couple that got away from us. We lost some close ones. We won some. What did you learn through that, right? You had a new coaching staff. You needed to grow. You had to get some new pieces in place, hoping that that kind of propelled you forward. We're going to find out as the season goes on if that's the case or not. But if this Elida team can find a way to be consistent in their play night in and night out, this is a very, very dangerous team, and I think this is a team that will handle OG.
I agree with you, but they got to have the game up and down. When their quickness is dominating the game, that's how they beat just about everybody. But if it breaks down to a half-court set,
yeah,
they struggle a little bit because they have two guards that are really good, Amari Wash and Zory Island, but they're ball dominant guys, right? And so that flow that you need to have on a half court set kind of disappeared. But I want to say this, okay? They start out, 1-4? Mm-hmm. 1-4? Mm-hmm. Rookie coach. I know he's coached for a while, but first time as the head coach at Elida, right? Things could have folded very easily, right? You got to say a lot of great things about Coach Howard keeping that group together, winning five of the last six.
Yep. Yeah. Guys, game four, St. Henry at Coldwater. Mark Schein and Jack McGuire on the call. St. Henry comes in at 4-5. Coldwater 3-3. And I'm going to say this, fellas. I had a chance to watch Coldwater this weekend. They are 3-3 only because they got a late start because of football. This is a talented team, guys. I'm telling you, they gave Shawnee all they wanted. Shawnee wins by 2 last week. Coldwater comes back. They've got size, they've got guards, and Baylen Blockberger can flat out score, you guys. He is an underrated player who can just fill it up. I like this Coldwater team.
I was going to ask you, because they have him listed as the point guard.
He runs the point. But he's so good as a two guard off the ball. He gets on the wings. He can knock down jumpers. He can create his own shot. He can get to the rim. He is so athletic. Love that kid.
Yeah, if there's anybody that's worried about Coldwater basketball, they'll be fine. Their three losses are to Rushi, who they had to open the season with, which just seems unfair, especially with a Rushi team that already had like 5 or 6 games under their belt.
Cavs were busy that night.
So they lose to Rushi, lose to Jackson Center, another really good program, right? That's their second loss. And then they just lost to a really good Shawnee team. We know how good they can be, and that was just a 2-point loss. They're going to be okay. That is a Coldwater team that if I'm Spencerville, I'm watching very closely, because that's going to be who I see because Spencerville, most likely when you look at those brackets, right? They're getting sent down south with those MAC teams, and they're going to have to come up against most likely it's going to be right that the Cavaliers, maybe the Marion Local Flyers, but you're going to have some tough teams down there. And this Coldwater team, as the season goes and we move through January and we get into February, this is a team that I don't think anybody wants to see.
I just don't know if St. Henry's going to have enough firepower, right? Hulsman scores 10 points a game, but who else, right? I know they have Austin Zimmerman, a freshman that you keep an eye on. He's going to be fantastic. Gets about 5 rebounds a game, but how are they going to score with Coldwater? You know Blockberger's going to at least get 20, right, Danny?
He's averaging 20 right now.
Right, right. Yeah. So he's going to get at least 20, so I don't know how you keep up with Coldwater. I think Coldwater wins that one.
Guys, game 5, St. Mary's at Wapakoneta. Myself and the rookie, Austin Scott, will be on the call for this one. Guys, these are two teams that really need a win. St. Mary's starts the year out with a 2-0 record. They have lost 6 of their last 7. Wapakoneta has lost 3 of their last 4. Now, the good thing about this game is a rivalry game. These schools don't like each other.
It's always
a good game. I have the privilege of calling that, so looking forward to a good game.
We had Caleb Moyer, right? Without a doubt. Well, yeah. St. Mary's is, without a doubt. Moyer's getting a little bit healthier with that hand. I think that's going to be a big thing, because everybody knows you got to stop Ryan Richardson, right? Salina did a great job with that last week. That's how they were able to get a win over top of Wapakoneta. I really think the best basketball for Wapakoneta, though, towards the end of the year. This is a very young team. They're going to be really good next year. Keep an eye on Caleb Adams and Blake Rogers. St. Mary's, Nate, don't really know about them yet, right? They started out well. They're not playing real good basketball right now.
Well, there's so many changes in this rivalry, right, with the coaches and young players, and there's this it's such a different feel than what we're used to in a Walpauk St. Mary's rivalry basketball game. St. Mary's even more so, though. You have a first year head coach. Everybody seemed to have graduated off of that team. That starting five has very little varsity experience. There's going to be a ton of growing pains. I saw them against Marion Local a couple of weeks ago, and you could just tell that they're still trying to figure a lot of things out. That's going to happen. The issue that Walpauk is going to face right now is that offense has to find another gear. Their defense is really good. They're holding teams, to low point totals. But they just cannot get that offense going for whatever reason. And until they do, they're going to be a team that can be beaten. You know, without a ton, you're not going to have to put a ton of points up to do so.
A lot of pressure for Richardson to have to get three, four threes every single time out, carry the load offensively. Like you said, Nate, they need someone to carry the second person. I think it'll be Caleb Moyer once he gets fully healthy.
Yeah, would think. Yeah.
Guys, game six is a girls matchup. I said before the game of the year was XYZ. Well, this is the game of the year coming up. Ottawa Glandorf at Fort Laramie. Mark Schein, Ben Slayton, both teams come in undefeated. Fort Laramie, an absolute juggernaut. How Carla Siegel's not an NBA coach yet with all her wins, because she is fantastic. I've interviewed Carla a few times. Love her. I think she does a great job.
She intimidates me.
Oh, she
She's
does.
She's terrifying. She I've been there in games, and I'm like, I don't want to know if I'm good.
And then you've got Ottawa Glandorf. Yeah. They don't back down from anybody. No. They play as tough a schedule. This is a huge game.
Yeah, Kimmett and Erford versus Brandywine and Mesher. I mean, both teams got two studs, right? It's going to be a laugh one. Both teams can score a lot of points. OG can get up to 73. Fort Laramie can get up to 69. Danny, I saw a stat, and I want to make sure, because you've talked to her a couple times, right? 544 and 125. Yeah. That's Carla's record.
Guys,
that's
crazy. Let me tell you, let me tell you a story. I was down there a couple years ago for this game. Okay. They had their little dribblers come out at halftime. Okay. They had their little dribblers come out at halftime of the JV game, and they had little dribblers come out at halftime of the varsity game. They were two separate group of girls. There were 60 plus in each group.
Nice.
60 plus in each group.
I think I was with you on that.
Yeah,
call,
I think
actually.
You were. Yeah. Yeah. And I was blown away.
Nice
the place
to
was,
remember, huh?
You were so memorable.
Yeah, I think that was you, wasn't it?
It's not a team down there. It is an absolute program. Mm-hmm. They've got state banners all over the place. Carla Siegel is a Hall of Fame coach, and I don't say that lightly. She is one of the best.
So this is the fifth straight year that these programs have played each other, right? Ottawa Glandorf in that time have had teams with 8 losses has been the most losses they've had in any of those years. Other years, it's been 2 or 3 has been the most losses. They have lost 3 of the 4 matchups over the previous 4 years coming into this one. Fort Laramie is just this mountain that OG, for some reason, can't seem to climb. This Fort Laramie team, year in and year out, is really good. This year is no different, fellas. They are 11-0. They have held 10 of their 11 opponents to 30 points or less.
That is crazy.
I mean, what are you supposed to do?
Watch them play. They run and jump. They trap. Yeah, they press. It is. Remember Nolan Richardson from Arkansas, what he used to call it?
40 minutes of hell.
Yeah, right. It is. It is absolutely that. And they are so fun to watch.
Yeah. This is going to be 3 in a row, though, on the road for OG, if that matters. You know, it's not easy to go on the road, but especially when you go to Fort Laramie.
Well, not only that, they got Columbus Grove this week. Right. They got Fort Laramie. And
the only win Ottawa Glandorf has in this series is 2 years ago at Fort Laramie.
Okay.
Guys, game 7 is a boys matchup. Randy Roberts, Miles Holiday on the call. Finley at Ottawa Glandorf. Finley comes in at 1-8. Their only win this year is over St. Mary's, 51-47 on December 12th. OG comes in at 2-7.
All right, so I might be skewed because I'm not sure I saw a fair representation of Finley, because I called senior against Finley a couple weeks ago for 93-1 the fan, and that was a running clock, I think, at the start of the second half.
I'm a senior
half.
Does that to a lot of teams.
Yeah, it's fair. I do have to point out that at one point in time, Finley, to stop Lima Senior from running, were shooting a free throw, and they took all 4 guys and put them back, and Senior got the rebound, still beat them to a layup. That's how quick Lima Senior is. They're absolutely ridiculous. Finley, though, looked like they have a lot of problems. I mean, a very young basketball team. Do not take care of the basketball. Do not score. So, I mean, how do you go on the road to OG and win a game, even though OG is not playing great basketball for OG standards? I still like OG in this. Keep an eye, though, on Blade Went. I'll do a Danny right here. Blade Went, he can really knife through the lane.
Yeah, you're right. That's Danny's thing. Yeah.
He's a good one. He's a 10-point-a-game scorer, but watch them. You know, if Montgomery would have been healthy and not going to play Division I, this would be a much different team, right? He'd be playing for them, but he's not, unfortunately. So I think Finley's got an uphill battle here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that this Finley team is one one player away, unfortunately.
No.
And I think the issue that is going to be probably the most glaring in this one is what you talked about, and is that Finley's ability to protect the basketball. We know what Ottawa Glander is going to do defensively. They're going to play full court. They're going to put pressure on you. They're going to try to do everything they can. And like we talked about with the OG Elida game, right? What benefited Elida was that it was at Elida. Mm-hmm. This one's at OG.
Yep. Yep.
The smaller floor, a lot less space for Finley to operate in. Ottawa Glander has home court for a reason. That is one of the toughest places to go and play a basketball game, especially if you're struggling holding on to the basketball. So I think ultimately that will be what makes the difference in this game, is Ottawa Glander's ability to create turnovers and to create points off of those turnovers. Finley, we talked about it a lot like St. Mary's. New head coach, new players all over the place, just a lot of stuff that they're trying to figure out right now. That stuff doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. It doesn't matter what your preseason build into a season is. It takes time, and that's where Finley's at right now. They're just in growth mode.
Do you guys love calling a game at OG? I mean, you know, you're in that overhang. You do lose a little bit of the core, right, with that overhang. You can't see it all the time, but I absolutely love it. The venue is amazing. Yep. The atmosphere is great. Yep. I know for you, Danny, it's got to be a little bit difficult because you're stuck there, so everybody sees you, and then people want your autograph as you're leaving.
Well, that's a nice thing, though, because he just slides down that back stairwell out the back door. Right. He doesn't have to.
Most of the time, I have Gilly with me, so he shades me.
Or sometimes if you're calling the game in the same venue as Danny and you're on the other side and you see each other and you wave and you say hi, you acknowledge your existence, he runs out so fast to avoid saying even hi to you or acknowledging that you exist.
I was going to talk to Nate, but he got in late to the game because he was sleeping in the car.
Actually, that part's true. Because after that game is when I got in the car to drive down to Florida. I was taking a nap out in the parking lot.
Have you ever shown up for a game there and then your partner's like shows up at halftime because he's at the wrong place?
Last week.
Yeah, I know. Because then you left, right? I was like, where's Dan? I was going to say hi. And like, oh, he left. He saw you coming and bolted.
Guys, game 8 is the Putnam County League Showdown. Pandora Gilboa at Ottaville. Pandora Gilboa comes in 5-4. They are 2-2 in their last four. Ottaville comes in 6-4. They've won 3 of their last 4. This is always a really good game.
It is. And PG with Mike Lee doing a great job as always at 5-4. When you look at them, you're like, wow, they graduated a ton, which they did, right? The Harris brothers were fantastic for him last year. But they have a guy that can score in Lane Lee. He's a slashing kind of guy, attacks the rim. He can step back and hit the three. But Corey Girton, remember him from the football field, the quarterback. He is a really tough guy for them. So they give them two scores, and they will frustrate you because they'll sit in a 2-3 zone. And you think, okay, they'll get out eventually. No, Mike Lee, he's stubborn. He says, you're going to have to beat our 2-3 zone. Now, the good thing for Ottaville, if there's anyone who knows how to beat a 2-3 zone, Keith Uthendorf, right? He knows too, right?
Yeah, this is one of those great PCL matchups. This is going to be a great game. Obviously, both programs know each other very, very well. For Ottaville, though, this is going to be their first conference game. For Pandora Gilboa, this will actually be their third. They've only got one right now. They have a really tough matchup ahead of this one, though, against a very good Miller City team.
Yes.
That is going to be a difficult game. So there's a chance that Pandora Gilboa comes into this game 0-2 in conference play. You can't go 0-3. This will be a must-win game for Pandora if they want to stay in that conference hunt. And then you got Ottaville, where obviously you don't want to start your conference season off with a loss. So this is a really interesting matchup, even though it's early January as far as those conference standings go.
And keep in mind, though, this will be the third game in 5 days for Ottaville during this run as well. So will they have tired legs? You know, coaches always say they want to play games instead of practice, but sometimes you don't want to play every single day.
Garrett Mansfield and Josiah Stober on the call for that game. Guys, game 9, Arlington at Crestview. Dave Bowen and Kelsey Beimer on the call. Arlington comes in at 10-0, Crestview 7-3. This is, now you're not going to know this reference, Nate, because you're a youngin'. This is Ralph Sampson versus Patrick Ewing, okay?
Hey,
now,
right.
Ralph Sampson was
I've seen those documentaries. Those really old games.
Yeah. Right. Young Willow Tree comes in 6'10", going against Ren Sheets at 6'5". These are two towers battling in the middle.
So is Will Sheets, is he Patrick Ewing then?
What's that?
Is he Patrick Ewing?
No, Willow is Patrick. Ren Sheets is
you
Patrick
guys don't
Ewing.
Even know what references you're making.
And we're going Ralph Sampson, the young
you can't even keep
then,
him straight.
Wait a minute. Is Michael Graham then Will Sheets?
Old
Georgetown Hoyas.
Well, Calvin Willow's got to get somebody over there. But yeah, I don't know.
Willow's fantastic, but Chase Vermillion, right? That's the
He's
guy.
Really good,
He's really good for them. Arlington 10-0. Who knew? Yeah. Who knew they were going to
really
be 10-0?
Arlington team.
Yeah, it's a really good Arlington team. I had a chance to talk to Jace Vermillion after the game last year against when they upset PG. Oh, a fantastic kid. Great interview. This is going to be a fun game, right? Big guys inside, big guys versus inside. Here's the key, though. Crestview, we all know that Ren Sheets is going to do well. Will's going to come in do well as well. Who's going to hit a perimeter jumper?
Right.
Yeah, can they hit a perimeter jumper? If they can hit a perimeter jumper, if they can do it better than I can say it, then they're going to have success.
And it's really odd that Dave Bone's on the call for this. But,
right? This should be a really good matchup. This Arlington team, like you mentioned, kind of came out of nowhere. You know, I think people thought they were going to be good, but not 10-0 good. They have a lot of talent on this team. This is a Crestview team, too, that I do think that has surprised some people. We're used to seeing Crestview be a good program and be able to win games, but I think they really opened up some eyes when they played Shawnee, right? In that Shawnee game, they're like, oh, this Crestview team is still very good. And the tough part for Crestview in this one, though, is the night before this game, they have to play Bluffton.
Yeah.
And that is a big NWC game.
That's right.
That is, you know, how you come out of that game is going to really predicate, I think, how this game goes, because, you know, that's not going to be an easy game, and that's going to be a big rivalry game, and that's a big game in that conference standings. How much energy Crestview has to, you know, spend in that one, and how quickly they can bounce back from however that game goes on Friday night will really have a bearing on how this one goes Saturday.
It's great you brought up Bluffton, because that was the one that got everybody's attention for Arlington, right?
Exactly.
And that win over Bluffton.
Yep.
Let me do this right, guys. All right, you ready for this? Welcome to the Holy War. Lima Central Catholic, Delphi St. John's. It's a Sunday afternoon showdown. Myself and Darren Gilbert are going to call this one. Guys, there's a few games every year I look forward to. This is one of them. You throw the records out, and I'm not kidding you. It's Jaden Pretty and his cast of freshmen and sophomore. It's the Elwer brothers. The gym's going to be full. This is so much fun.
How many threes are going to be shot in this one?
Oh, right, man.
How many three references am I going to use?
You better have your list ready.
No, it's a fantastic game year in and year out. It's one of I've had the chance to call it a couple of different times, and it's such a fun game. It reminds me so much of our old friend Aaron Matthews. This was his favorite game of the year. He loved the Holy War. It should be another great matchup. There's a lot of interesting things. You know, you got an LCC team that is so up and down. Yeah. They have talent all over that floor, but they're so young. Trying to get them to put it all together on the same night is getting difficult, I think, for Coach Powell. They've had some bumps that they've had to go over. You got Delphi St. John's that looks like right now what is going to stop Delphi St. John's. I don't know that anybody knows. Roosie might be
mentally
it,
tough.
Right? This is just such a good team. So there's all of those things, and that'll make it a great game, right? But when you talk about rivalries, right, I got a stat for you guys, courtesy of Bob Sagerson. Coach Sag threw this stat out that got to me that I can't believe it. So it's going to be a little bit of trivia for you guys, okay? Delphi St. John's and LCC have played for almost 100 years now. They've been playing, okay? In all of their matchups, through all of this time, almost 100 years of playing, what is your guess and what the total point differential is? LCC's points, Delphi St. John's points.
Oh, wow.
What is that point difference? What is the difference?
All time.
Of the 100 years,
of the play. What is the all time?
I'm going to say, because of the athletes and the players in this game, I'm going to say it's 150 points that separate them.
Okay. What about you?
I'm going to say it's closer, 25.
It's 29.
Oh!
What?
It is a 29.
Free pizza.
It is a 29-point differential in over 100 years of playing between these two schools. These two teams always play each other so tough. There have been blowouts in this.
Oh, of course. There have
been on both sides. But these two teams play each other so close year in and year out. They play so hard. This is such a big rivalry game for these two schools.
It is almost
dead even. Yeah. Through 100 years of playing each other.
Is there a better venue there, though?
I
love that. That was my first experience. Danny said you're going to love it there. Absolutely did. You're on top. You're looking down. The old bleachers,
it's like
the old
you go
seats.
Back in time.
There's no update over there.
And it's got to be hot.
Yeah,
it gets really loud.
Especially that one. It's sold out, too, in that Shawnee game.
Yep. It got to be very tough, too, for an opponent because, I mean, you feel like, you know, like the old Hoosiers when this infirmary you call a gym, right? Because it's so tight in there, it's just got to drive you nuts. So it's going to be a great environment. I'm happy that you and Darren. How's Gilly going to get up in that
one step?
I know. How's he going to get up there?
One big step. He'll be fine.
He'll probably do a remote from like the locker room or something. We are going to do a show here, fellas, in the next couple weeks where we talk about our top high school gyms that we like to go to.
Oh,
I think that'll be a great show.
That's a great one. You wonder, though, how is, Nate, in your estimation, how is LCC going to try and deal with Cam Elwood? That's a big problem, right? You always got to, he's going to get a lot of points. Who do they match up? Can they match up? And furthermore, how are they going to score against DSJ? Pretty's got to have 25-plus, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be difficult. I don't know what the plan would be. The LCC right now is a really hard team to read. Coach Powell has messed with his rotation. Mm-hmm. We've seen different starting lineups, guys in, guys out. Their last game against Defiance, they started Dom McKee for the first time, really kind of for the first time this season gave him size underneath.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this is the first year Dom's played basketball. So there's a lot going on there that I think Coach Powell is trying to work through because of how young that roster is. The problem is, what's got to be frustrating if you're Coach Powell, right? You have a player like Jordan Pretty. At some point, you almost feel like you're wasting a year of just amazing play, right? Because he scores so effortlessly.
He does. And can do it at all levels.
And it's just been a rough year for them. I don't know how they're going to stop Cam Elwer. I don't know. They're not a great zone playing team. They don't really play sets. They are man to man.
I don't want to play zone against.
Well, they play man to man. They're going to play you up. I don't know who you have guard. Jeff Williams does a great job. He uses that speed and athleticism. He can be frustrating, but he does pick up a lot of fouls. He does give up size. Cam Elwer is so underrated as far as his strength goes. I'm very not strong. Sure that that's going to be a great matchup.
Finishes through contact.
And that's what I said. It was I 100% agree with you. I would play Jeff Williams straight up on him, but here's the problem.
Help.
He's going to shoot over top of you, and if you don't get defensive rotation in the front court, you're done.
Yep.
Because he gets – that is his game.
Yeah.
He gets to the rim. He's going to shoot over you, and the first thing you do is you step towards him. What's he do? He goes around you. And like I said, if your bigs don't help, it doesn't matter.
It's going to be a tough matchup.
Nobody stopped him all year.
No.
So if Jeff Williams gives up 30, we're like, okay.
Well, and then I think that was how a lot of people were playing St. John's last year was, well, Cam's going to get his points. You let Cam be Cam. Nobody else will be able to really score, though. Someone else is going to have to beat you. Yeah. That ain't the St. John's team no more.
Their spacing is amazing, right? They put so much pressure on you with the spacing. And then I don't know if you've ever seen, or I've ever seen, I should say, a guy that recognizes how he's being played on the dribble. And if a guy is just a little bit out of position, a little bit high in his stance, he's going to take you off the dribble, and he knows he's going to get that foul. He is so crafty and so smart at recognizing how he's being played. There's no flaw in his game.
Yeah. It's awards time, gentlemen, and we have another award to give out. Miles, I'm going to let you introduce our guest tonight.
Look, football's a tough game, right? You have to be physical, right? And if you're going to win games, you have to have some toughness. And so we're giving away the Tough Dude of the Year award. And when I watch this guy play, you guys heard me talk about him all year long. I call him Scrap Iron.
He's your man crush.
Because Scrap Iron is tough. And I'm talking about Vinny Brinkman from Ottawa Glandorf. I didn't see a guy all year long that was tougher than you and loved physicality. A guy that just loved the block. Well-deserved. Congratulations, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Vinny, let's get right to it. You look at the Titans from last year, 1-9, not a great season to speak of. And then you guys come back. You go 6-6, 5-4 in the league. What was the turnaround? You got a tough guy like you. We want to know what part you played in that and what was the big turnaround.
Yeah, after we lost a lot of games the past 2 years, we came back. Leadership from the seniors. A lot of seniors stepped up this year. A lot of guys in the weight room. And I think that leadership just proved that we knew we could do it last year. We had a lot of close games, but this year it was just different. A lot of guys stepped up, and we changed some stuff this year, and it showed.
Vinny, are you a vocal leader, or do you do it on the field, or do you get in guys, grab helmets and stuff like that? We grab helmets.
We didn't have a lot of guys like that on the team. We just kind of, we just knew our responsibility. We knew our role, and when someone messed up, we spoke it, but I wasn't really the one to go out and yell at people. I kind of yelled at them on the field, but I didn't really try to be mean about it or anything.
In a day and age where everybody wants the football, right? And you got to carry the ball a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But I could tell you took a lot of joy in being the guy that kind of is like the road grader, lead the way. Where did that love of blocking and that love of physicality and football, where did that come from?
our freshman year, we went to state and we had a lot of guys up front. I kind of looked up to them. I kind of called myself a lineman this year, H-back type of guy. And Grant Everest, I love that dude. He's awesome, my running back. And I just love blocking for him. I just love seeing we just had so much fun out there on the field, and I just loved having fun with my guys. So.
What's the best part of blocking? Is it when you take him to the ground on a pancake, or you know, you just see the quit in his eyes, or what's the best part?
I think taking him down on the pancake. That can't game. There's a lot of those.
Do you have a favorite, like your favorite run play when coach, you heard it in the huddle, you're like, oh yeah, I get to go in motion, I'm going to trap a guy? Because mine, as a left guard, 20 trap, right? Defensive tackle comes up field, doesn't see me coming. I just ear hole him, run him right over. What was your favorite play?
We had this, so when we faced Defiance this year, we saw that Salina kind of had this one play. We put it in our playbook. We called it Bulldog after the Salina Bulldogs, and I would come over, and it was a trap motion again. And in practice, it worked all week. We ran it once or twice at Defiance. I had a couple of pancakes that game, but that was probably my favorite play. It was Bulldog.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. You know, the physicality that you play with and all that doesn't come naturally to a lot of people. Like, a lot of people think they can be tough, but when the moment comes, maybe they shy away from that contact. What was your moment not even this year, just in your career, where you hit somebody or you had a play and you're like, all right, this is what I want to do. This is what I like doing.
It was Kent game again. I hit, I don't remember, I think it was 31, number 31, knocked him down. And I could hear Coach Schreiner yelling from the sideline, like, there you go, that's what I've been waiting for all year. And I don't know, it kind of clicked with me after that.
Nice.
Vinny, I'm going to ask you the question that I ask every guest we have on here. And everybody's watching, so be careful what you say here, all right?
Uh-oh.
What is the one team that you enjoy beating the most? You've said Kenton a couple times. Is it the Wildcats? Who is it?
It is the Bath Wildcats.
What was that like? A big rainstorm this year, right?
Yeah, it was like a hurricane out there, and in pregame, everyone could feel it. We've never had a game where we're so hyped to beat Bath. People like online post stuff, and they were all posting how they were going to beat us at their homecoming, and we beat them 26-0 this year, and that was the best game. That was my favorite game.
WBL is a tough league. What is that like, night in and night out, playing those teams? I don't think people understand. I come from a smaller school, and the WBL, it's just a physical league, and you got to do it every Friday night.
Yeah, Liberty Benton was tough game too. Yeah. And WBL, the other schools around here don't know what it's like to play in the WBL. I think MAC schools obviously do because they have Marion Local and they have tough teams down there. But WBL teams, I think Walpauk, St. Mary, Salina, Defiance even, they've all been good the past few years. And we're one of the smallest schools in WBL. And I think just going to their place and see their nice stadiums and stuff, it's fun to play at. And it's a lot of physicality and a lot of guys bigger than you. You just got to have the grit.
You know, you talked about the last couple of years, you guys not winning a whole lot of games coming into the season. That's a hard thing to come back from. You guys did a great job this year doing that. And I know you said it was kind of the leadership from the seniors that helped you guys do it. But what was it that led you guys to be like, we know that we're better than this. We know that this team that we have can accomplish more, especially coming off all those losses. That's a hard thing to kind of turn around.
Mm-hmm. I think the close games from the previous two seasons showed that. I mean, we were right there. It just came down to the clutch moments, and we didn't have that. I'd like to shout out Deegan Miller. He was a guy that we just threw the ball up to every time, and he could catch. He's a lot faster than a lot of people think he is. He had a good track season this year, and we actually had a really good track season last year, a whole team. And people say if you have a good track season, track team, you're going to have a good football team. And I think that showed that we could do it.
All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so if that's true, okay, watch out for Ottawa-Glandorf next year because I got some insider knowledge that the early numbers coming back from the Ottawa-Glandorf track team, 110 kids signed up for track this year at Ottawa-Glandorf.
A lot of kids signed up.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I promise you. Yes. Came from
guys.
I'm telling you. That's why when it came to them, hey, you'd be interested in this, and they told me, and they said they had their initial meeting. You guys had 110 kids sign up for track over
time. Yes, you're interested. Tell them you're interested.
Yes, it was fantastic.
Wow, that's amazing.
So if there's that correlation, a good track team and a good football team, everybody in WBL better watch out next fall.
Yikes.
Yeah. You run track, Vinny?
Yeah, I throw, actually. I do shot put and discus, and I ran the 100 a few times, okay. But my main thing is shot put, I'd say.
Danny ran the 100 a couple times, but it took two times. Yeah, like, no more, son. No more. Vinny, when you guys hear that WSN's coming to broadcast the game, what's that like? Do you guys get fired up about it, knowing that you're going to be on TV?
Yeah, I love watching the games back on YouTube and stuff. I always watch the games, and, yeah, our guys really enjoy seeing you guys there and stuff.
Is it one of those things where everybody understands, hey, we better play really well because we're going to be on TV?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think everyone, I don't know, like, you make a bad play, you kind of joke about it in the huddle. It's on TV.
Vinny, what's playing for Coach Schreiner like? Tough to play? Is he one of those old school guys, or not a lot of lovey-dovey there, right?
Very intimidating, I'd say that. He kind of just walks up to you, make a smart remark, and walks away, and you're just like, uh-oh, I messed up.
Some tough love, huh? Uh-huh. Yeah, like that. The nickname Scrap Iron, you like it?
Yeah, my friends joke about it, actually, right, like, last week someone said something about it, like, they just call me Scrap Iron all the time and stuff. I love it, though, it's fun.
That's great. It fit you. I just thought, we had you, and you're like, wow. The one thing that was evident is just your love of being a teammate, man. You guys had a great culture there. What's it like playing in that football program where coach, everybody's going to be physical, everybody's going to play hard, you guys are going to care about each other, but what's it going to be like when you're not with it? What are you going to miss, and what's it like being in that program?
I always think about this question a lot, like, what am I going to do? I don't know. I don't have football in my life anymore, mm-hmm. And I think just going back to the games, I'll support everyone that's there, and I don't know. I don't really know what I'm going to miss a lot. Probably just being out there on the field with my seniors. They were awesome to play with, and I'm going to miss that a lot.
Now, your folks are in education. All right. We were talking to you. You take your studies very important. You're studying on the way down here, right? You got college in front of you. Maybe going into teaching and coaching someday?
Yeah, my mom actually just talked to me about that today. She brought up the idea of coaching somewhere, and I was like, I don't know if I can really do that for a living, but I can definitely see myself.
Well, nobody
in the
does it for a living.
Yeah, if you're into the coaching for money, you picked wrong.
Vinny, what advice would you give, let's say, an eighth grader coming into the varsity JV program at Ottawa Glendore? If you know how hard you got to work, what kind of advice would you give them?
I'd just be in the weight room, and I say, work in every day. I was in the weight room every day. Eat right, too. You got to eat right to be good at football.
Last question for me, Vinny. Ottawa Glendorf is, it seems like it's a very special place to play in general, no matter what the sport is, right? Mm-hmm. Winning is just oozing out of that place. What is it about Ottawa Glendorf that makes them so different than other programs where you see a lot of other successful programs in maybe one sport? At Ottawa Glendorf, it doesn't matter what sport it is. Winning is just the standard. What makes Ottawa Glendorf so special?
I think the small town feel of it, honestly. I think our fans are awesome. They're always at the games. A lot of people are there. A girls game was like almost sold out, and we have a big girls game coming up against Columbus Grove.
Yeah, we're going to preview that game.
And I think the small town feel of it, like, I used to go to my friend's house all the time, like the suburbs, play basketball with them, play backyard football. I think it's just that, honestly, just getting a lot of practice, getting athletic when you were as a kid with all your friends, all your buddies, play wiffle ball and stuff. I don't know. I love the small town feel of it.
Now, one of the things that you do as a young athlete, right, you always measure yourself against dad, right? You're playing with dad in the front yard, backyard. What age were you where you realized, like, I can dominate dad at any time?
he's definitely not over there. Don't look.
Over here, buddy.
He's a pretty big dude. And I remember I hit a growth spurt in sixth grade, and we'd be at the local bar, and he'd try to arm wrestle me, and I could never beat him. But he said, I think it was 2 years ago, like, I can finally beat him in an arm wrestling match. So probably that.
Well, he's here. Do we want to have a match right now, Dean? What do you think?
My ass too.
Right here, we got a flat table.
WSN wrestling match.
I don't think anybody wants that on video. Yeah.
Well, Vinny, congratulations. I mean, tough dude of the year. Keep it up, not just in football, but in your studies and in your life and being a good man. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Vinny. It's been a pleasure to watch you play football, man. I absolutely loved it, and we wish you nothing but success.
All right. Thank you, guys. Yep, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. The big matchup Friday night that we just discussed, Ohio State, Texas. Who wins and why?
Nate, what do you think?
You know, listen, I have, you know, you guys have famously made me an Ohio State hater all season long. When it's not been the case.
I will say this. I thought about you in the Rose Bowl in that opening quarter where Will Howard threw for 220 yards.
I'm sitting, where's Nate now? Sitting on a cruise ship in the ocean watching it on a big screen going, man, he might actually be a pretty good quarterback.
I wanted to text you, and I told my wife, I said, I'm going to text my buddy Nate. She's like, he's on a cruise. Leave him alone.
I also wouldn't have got it. So, what I'll say is the last two games, this is the Ohio State team that I was told I'd see all season. Right. I'm finally seeing the Ohio State team that we expected to see. And I'll tell you this much. Fellas, I've told you guys since August, I've had just a different feeling about this team compared to all of my other years of fandom for Ohio State. It has been different watching them play the last 2 weeks. I have felt like, oh, this is Ohio State. Okay, this is who I've been waiting for. This is what I've been wanting to see. This is the football team that I expected us to have week in and week out starting back in August. I think Ohio State wins. I think right now that defense is playing on a completely different level. I think the offense has finally found its rhythm. I think they've realized who they are, and they're finally starting to play to who they are, not who they think they should be.
That's great.
Playing with joy, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, we watched them play earlier in the year, and they were, like, tight. And, you know, just you could see the weight of the world on their shoulders. It's gone, right? They're playing with such joy and passion. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, I said it on the radio show today that Tennessee game was 21 degrees, but it was perfect condition. There was no wind. The field was in great shape. They went out there, they executed, and they dominated the trenches. We go to the Rose Bowl, we get 65 degrees, a beautiful field. They go out, they dominate in the trenches. Mm-hmm. They pass the ball, they do whatever they want. We're going to Texas in a dome stadium, 72 degrees, and I think we're going to do the same thing. I think this is the best team in the country, and barring a massive meltdown, I think we play for a national championship, and wouldn't you love to play either Penn State or Notre Dame? I don't care who it is.
I don't think it matters. I think if they beat Texas, they're going to win the national title. I remember being on this show, and I told you guys we beat Tennessee. We were going to beat Oregon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just think this team is a team of destiny right now. It's the only team left in the tournament that you feel comfortable that they're going to score 30 to 40 points every single time. And you feel comfortable saying that I don't think they're going to allow 20 points, right?
Yeah.
Because that defense is so good. I think they're a team of destiny. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch these next two games.
Yeah.
So with all that said, what happened after the Michigan game? I mean, there was a switch that was flipped on, right?
Yeah. Wouldn't you like to be into Woody Hayes and find out? Everybody talks about that post-Michigan meeting where Ryan Day, you know, and the team, they just let it all go and they kind of yelled at each other. And, you know, maybe sometimes you have to do those things to purge. I will tell you this. What they've done offensively changed their identity, right? They've been freewheeling. They've went to a counter-run game. They've spread the field. They've used tempo when they needed to use tempo. They're smartly getting the guy the ball that should get the ball, right. And who they didn't throw to once against Michigan in the second half, Jeremiah Smith. It's just a whole different team. It's like they have a whole new lease on life.
I mean, the irony in all this is when this is all said and done, there's a real good chance that we're going to have to write a collective thank you letter to the University of Michigan and send it up to the football team and say, hey, we appreciate you guys completely.
We'll stick it in the middle of their field.
Yeah, we have to deliver it and put it right on the M on the middle of the field and say thank you, because whatever happened woke them up. And I don't know if it was the game. I don't know if it was Jack Sawyer at the end of the game. I don't know what it was that was the catalyst for this, but it was something that happened on that day in Columbus after that Michigan game that set all of this into motion, and it whatever it was has worked.
Yeah, and I just wonder, and this is, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I wonder if they lose this game to Texas, does everybody reflect back to the Michigan game, or do they say, nice job, Ryan Day, of regrouping the troops?
Here's why I don't think they lose to Texas, right? Very inconsistent offensively.
Oh,
Texas.
Very inconsistent. Okay. Very inconsistent.
Their secondary for Texas, I don't think they match up with Ohio State really well.
I don't think an NFL secondary matches up with Ohio State's receivers.
Quinn Ewers, I like him. We sacked the midget from Oregon 8 times, right?
Yes.
All right, Quinn Ewers is a statue compared to him. I think we get after Quinn Ewers. I don't want to wish ill on anybody, but I would not be surprised he gets knocked out.
Arch Manning.
And we see Arch Manning, because we are playing extremely well. How many times did we get pressure with four guys against Oregon, right?
Well, that was the key to the game.
Right tackle, left tackle for Texas, both have lower leg injuries, left high ankle sprain for left tackle. He's a top 10 pick in the NFL, but you try stopping JT Tuimoloau when you got a bad wheel.
And the offensive line has looked a lot better over the last couple of games as well. I mean, still some issues, but, I mean, they've looked better. And that was the big glaring piece for a while, right? It was like, what's that O-line going to do? Well, they didn't have to be the best in the country. They just had to be a passable offensive line, and I think they're there.
Where's the Rose Bowl win rank at for you guys? Wins over Michigan, ooh, wins over, you know.
I hate to go way back, but when we were kids, John Cooper's team came back and beat LSU. Yes. I thought that was an amazing win at the time. But yeah, to me, beating Alabama in the semifinal.
2015.
I thought that was absolutely amazing, right? Other than that, I thought the Rose Bowl was just the biggest win, other than Michigan and a national title game. That might have been the most fun game to ever watch as a Buckeye fan.
To me, this is probably – it's hard to rank it, because ultimately, what did it win you? We won a Rose Bowl, but it's been kind of dimmed a little bit, because –
it's not like winning the Rose Bowl.
You didn't win the Rose Bowl. We didn't win the national championship. We didn't win the Big Ten championship.
Didn't culminate a season.
It was a step that we had to take. So it's not one I think that's going to resonate with me for long term. I honestly think the Tennessee win will resonate with me longer than the Oregon win.
We were at that game.
Oh, is that the one? I think, you know what?
It would have resonated more if he'd been there.
I think I knew that. But mainly because as a fan base, I think we were all holding our collective breath. It didn't matter how confident you felt. You didn't know what you were going to see coming off of that Michigan loss. And so I think that game, with how they won, I think that one will stick with me more than this Rose Bowl win. Honestly, this, you know, outside of Michigan and Natty game, you know, this isn't any bigger of a win to me than that Purdue game back in 2001, right on the fourth
Holy
and one
Buckeye.
Call. Yeah,
Holy
like
Buckeye, yeah.
That one will stick with me way longer than this one. Will.
Yeah, so I said this one, moments.
Yeah. So this one,
we had to have that game.
It's a good win, and we get to move on, but it doesn't really do much overall other than
you
we get
the
to
number
move through
one,
a tournament.
13-0 team,
but
though.
But if you're a true fan, you didn't think we were – I mean, it was a 31-30 game when you played it before.
The true fan that says, I don't care if they moved the start time or not for high school basketball to watch the Buckeyes.
Yeah, because I'm going
to
watch the Buckeyes regardless. I don't care less what you do with your high school game. I'm going to watch Ohio State.
The good, the bad, and the Buckeye, Miles.
The good. The O-line pass protection continues to be absolutely amazing, right? I think Will Howard – by the way, Cotton Bowl officials, if you're listening, and I know you are because you love our podcast, let Will Howard on the stage after the game, will you please?
Right.
Please let him on the stage.
Right.
Who was that old guy at the Rose Bowl?
He said it was a weight limit.
No,
you've
Will
got
Howard,
350
no.
pound lineman.
It was the weight limit.
That's what he said. He said that's what
he's
the
like,
Rose Bowl committee said.
Aren't you that Kansas State quarterback? Yeah. Get out of here.
The best was like, I'm the quarterback. I don't care who you are.
I, in all fairness, it was just me in a mask.
Nate Garlock, the evil carnival owner.
But the pass protection has been absolutely amazing, right? Yeah. And people say, well, he's getting rid of the ball quickly. No, I mean, there was some great play action where he had to hold on to it for 5-7 seconds. The play action passes were there. Just the offensive line, you said it, doing a good job with the run game. But to me, the pass protection, because everybody said, you know, Birch for Oregon, oh, he's a first-round pick, right? I think Will Howard got hit twice. So that was the good. The bad, no holding penalties. This is absolutely ridiculous, isn't it?
Yep.
Jack Sawyer hasn't had a hold on him in 2 years. We haven't had anyone call a hold on the offensive line since week 4. You're telling me these teams are not holding?
Oh, no,
Ohio
they are.
They are, they right? Are.
I've seen – you've seen the clips afterwards. There was one play. Every D lineman was being held.
Yes.
And not one flag.
Yeah, call it, right? Yeah. If I'm Ryan Day, I'm screaming it all week long because you know Texas is going to hold at some point in time.
Of course they are.
And you want that to be a big moment where they call it. The Buckeye, like Jeremiah Smith, fantastic, right? Caleb Downs, I'm telling you, dude, so he is unbelievable. I mean, they play him in so many different roles. You know, they say they're only a two backer set. No, he'll roll up and he'll be that third backer, mm-hmm. right? The midget gets out of the pocket and throws on the sideline. Caleb Downs flies out of nowhere. He is as good as any safety I've ever seen in college football.
Yeah, so mine mirror a lot of yours. My good is the passing game. I think the passing game has looked really good. Will Howard has looked really well. They're finally doing what they're...
Hey, Will Howard, are you guys recording this?
Yes, please, if you're watching this.
They're finally doing... Listen, we win the Natty, I wear the I Love Will Howard t-shirt. Okay.
On the broadcast, yes. Can't wait for that.
But they're doing what they finally need to do, right? Like, here's Jeremiah Smith. It doesn't matter if you're covered. We're going to throw you the ball. It's almost like the Ja'Marr Chase effect when I watch the Bengals game. Joe Burrow just throws in the ball. He's not always open. He just finds a way to get his hands on the football. Jeremiah Smith is doing the same thing right now on the college level. Will Howard just throws it over that way and just trust that he's going to find a way to get his hands on that football some way, somehow. That's what they needed to do. They are a pass-first team. They need to stop thinking that they're a run-first team.
I think
throw the ball. It has looked the best. The passing game has looked really good. I've been really happy with that. That was my good coming out of that Rose Bowl. For me, the bad was the same thing. I had two, so I'll go to my other one. But my number one was the lack of holding calls. It is absolutely criminal what is happening with. I don't. It's almost. It's so bad and so glaring at this point. Like I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not a script. But it almost seems intentional. Like, well, we're just not going to call. We'll see how long
they're
we can
so
go
good.
Without calling them on a hold. Because I mean, it's not like simple holds. Like the clip I saw, they all were inside and turned and separation still holding on, not one flag. Like, what are you looking at this point? So with that put aside, for me, it's we won. It was a blowout. It was a great game. We got off to a fast start. But you guys know in big games, things happen. It was it's the inability to maintain that momentum. I was reading an article and they because I couldn't quite figure out, because I knew what I was watching, but I couldn't quite figure out how to articulate it. And they did a good job. And it said the middle eight, which is the four and first four. And I was like, that's exactly what it was.
Both.
Right. Yeah. They're looking so great. All the momentum is going their way. And then all of a sudden, there just seems to be this lull. And the offense all of a sudden stutters. The defense all of a sudden can't figure out what they're doing. And that's when you saw Oregon score. And we've seen that a couple of times out of them where it's like, well, why can't we just carry what we're doing? Why all of a sudden is it different, right?
Why can't you just score on every possession?
Well, but it's not even that. It's just they get away from doing what was working. And I don't know if I'm sure there's a strategy behind it. And, you know, well, we can't keep it, you know, can't be so predictable and this, that, and the other. But just keeping that momentum going without having to have a drop off and then pick it back up would be nice to see. I mean, at this point, too, in
maybe
a game like that,
are holding.
We're kind of nitpicking, too, right? Yeah, yeah. For me, the Buckeye, it's Jeremiah Smith. It's an easy one. It's the cheap out, but he's on a whole other level. Honestly, I think the conversation we got to start having is, does he just decide to sit out at some point and say, okay, I'm not going to.
So I think he loves playing football.
Oh, I do too. But we saw Ja'Marr Chase do it. He took an entire year off of football because he's like, well, I can't declare for the NFL draft, but I'm not going to go out this year and get hurt. And he was still a top five draft pick.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Smith, I think, is a better college receiver than Ja'Marr Chase was. And, you know, at some point, where this whole NIL and money and who's going to come at him and what backdoor deals get made and what's he promised and all that stuff's going to start coming to play with this kid a lot sooner than I think any Buckeye fan really wants.
That's my new fear. He's going to leave.
I don't think he will, though.
I can see Miami coming at him because
they almost had him.
Yeah. Guys, for me, the good Will Howard, I just think he is fantastic right now. He looks comfortable. He's getting all the time he needs. He's got great receivers. His touch on the ball is fantastic.
That throw to Emeka was
incredible.
Ridiculous.
It was incredible.
I called my wife, Lexi, back in. I said, you got to see this. She hates football. You got to watch this. This is an amazing throw.
Well, it's just finally nice because, you know, for a while, it was a bunch of underthrows. We saw his accuracy at times would just completely disappear, and it looks like whatever was going on with that, he is fixed.
You cannot tell me he was healthy in the Michigan game. There's no way.
No.
There's no way.
Not after that hit.
Right, right. Yes. The bad for me, and this is kind of nitpicky, I love Kirk Herbstreit, but him and Chris Fowler in the booth the other night, ridiculous.
A crimson wave.
Well, it was ridiculous the number of times they referenced back to the Michigan game. Look, we all of us, all 5 million people that live in the Buckeye State, or how many of whoever there is, We all know we lost the game. Mm. We get it. Yes, we took some lessons from that game. We're in the Rose Bowl. We're playing Oregon. Will you shut up about the Michigan game?
Well, Kurt, listen, he's Mason Blue through and through. You know?
Good point. And I am not taking anything away from it. If I was Michigan, I'd celebrate to the nth degree they beat us fair and square. But come on now, guys. Let's get over it. We're moving on. And the Buckeyes, Jeremiah Smith, guys, he's a Sunday player playing on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. He's going to go down, if things continue the next 2 years, as the greatest Ohio State receiver we've ever seen. And that list is incredible. And this kid is humble. He works hard. By all indications, he does what he has to do in the classroom, which it really doesn't matter because he's a millionaire anyways. And I'm not trying to diminish academics. I'm not. But at some point, it's going to be about football.
Better than Mike Lanise.
Yes. Better than Doug Donnelly.
Listen,
John Frank.
When it's all said
and done, Dr. John.
When it's all said and done, he might not just be the greatest Ohio State receiver. He may end up being the greatest college receiver that the game has seen. He has a chance to legitimately, if he keeps doing what he's doing, after his junior year, he'll be a consensus number one pick. It'll be the first number one wide receiver since Keyshawn Johnson.
I heard an ESPN pundit say the other day that if he had the first two picks and they were eligible, he'd take Caleb Downs and Jeremiah Smith.
Dan Orlovsky says if he went out this year, he'd be the number one pick.
And Jeremiah Smith is better than Brian Stabline. Better.
Really?
Wow. All right, guys. So we got the good, the bad, the Buckeye. Who scares you more, Penn State, Notre Dame?
I think Notre Dame. Why?
I agree.
Because they have a coach over there that I swear it's Jim Tressel. The way they play, do you remember we had no chance against Miami of Florida? Remember? We had no chance against them. But
maybe the greatest college football team in the history of college football.
Yeah, 33 straight or 34 going into that one. And we ran the football. We played great special teams, played great defense. I mean, you watch Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman – is doing a great job. That's their formula, right?
Mm-hmm. Physical.
They are extremely physical. You and I were talking a couple weeks ago. We watched their game, and I said, boy, I wish Marcus Freeman was our coach because I love how physical they are, right? And, well, not right now, I don't.
Ryan. I'm back on Ryan Day's bandwagon.
Yeah, but I think Penn State, James Franklin's always going to do James Franklin-type things, and I think that, we're going to beat Penn State because there is a huge mental block with Penn State and us, right? There's got to be.
24-6 over the last 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's got to be that dealing with Penn State. But Notre Dame, I do not want to tussle with that. Now, I think our talent would win out, but I think at halftime it'd be one of those nip-and-tuck games, but I think we'd still beat Notre Dame, but I don't want to.
Leonard Riley's no Craig Krenzel. There's no comparison, right? To me, it's Penn State, and the only singular reason is it is so difficult to beat a team twice in the same season.
Oh, we just saw it, right?
It is very hard to do. That was a close game. There are some narratives and talking points when it comes to Will Howard and Penn State. And, we kind of saw some of that come into play because, he's a Pennsylvania kid and Penn State didn't recruit him and all of that kind of coming into play. Now you're doing it for a national championship. The overconfidence of Ohio State against Penn State. What a reclamation project if you're James Franklin and you somehow manage to beat Ohio State for a natty to turn this entire narrative of you can't beat Ohio State. There's just a lot more in that Penn State world that would have me more nervous than I think playing a Notre Dame team who I think is very well coached. I think Marcus Freeman is going to, if he stays at the college level and he stays at Notre Dame, will have Notre Dame year in and year out as a much stronger powerhouse than we've seen over the last decade. I just don't think they're there yet.
He's going to have to recruit skill kids at a high level. He's not doing that yet. But to build off your point a little bit, what a bad choice for Ryan Day. You play Notre Dame, you lose in Notre Dame. You lost to Marcus Freeman, right?
Mm-hmm.
You play Penn State, you lose to Penn State. You lost to James Franklin, who you always beat, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is a tough world for Ryan Day on either one of them.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, and if Notre Dame, this is completely off topic, but Notre Dame's biggest problem, it's what's going to hold them back from being a national powerhouse, is Marcus Freeman's come out and said, we don't major in the portal, we minor in it, right? That was his quote.
Yeah, not in this day and age.
And I don't know that it's his fault. the acceptance at Notre Dame is not easy. That is going to disqualify a lot of kids who've already been in college who are jumping from school to school to school.
Yep.
The Notre Dame standards for academics and for acceptance is just not going to allow those kids to come in. They're never going to be able to go to the portal and get 25 kids. It's just not going to happen.
That's why Lou Holtz left years ago.
Yeah. I think it's going to, I think we're going to play Notre Dame. I think Penn State, James Franklin's going to tighten up in the biggest game of his career. I don't think he's going to get a chance to be in the national championship. I think Drew Eller is a good quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback. Their top defensive player is a little banged up, as he was most of the season. I watched Oregon move the ball up and down the field against them with ease. I seen other Big Ten teams, you know, but again, there are a lot of factors there that that Penn State would have in their favor. I think the matchup with Notre Dame would be just incredible. We saw it last year in South Bend. It was such a struggle.
Was that a game you guys went to too?
Yeah,
we were there.
Oh, you guys went to that one? Yeah. That's cool. Let's talk more about the cool stuff you guys do together.
Hey, all right, let's get off that segment.
Last thing though, okay, if it does wind up, well, it's going to be, you know, if it is Ohio State and it's Midwest schools, right? Mm-hmm. Why do we have to play it in Atlanta?
Right.
Can't we say, oh, let's just move it to Indianapolis?
I'd rather be in Atlanta than Tempe.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, at least Atlanta, that's drivable. It's within distance. Like, Atlanta's a much better location, if you ask me, for two Midwest schools than going to the Rose Bowl or Tempe or Cotton.
I agree with that.
Or any of those. Like, if you have to pick, I'd much rather go to Atlanta.
I want us to have a Midwest destination at some point in time in the CFP, because it's going to be unfair that Ohio State or Penn State, Notre Dame, all these people, we got to travel forever.
Well, they won't ever change. They won't change that, though, because you're talking about going to bowls that have existed
We've
for 40 years.
We've changed everything already in college football.
It's
Can't
the
we
one
just
last thing the Purists are holding on to.
Call it the Indy 500 Bowl. Right, just add an Indianapolis Bowl.
All right, guys, let's finish this one up with boys basketball. Who's the best team in Lima Land, gentlemen?
Nate, you want to go first?
Delphi St. John's. I think it's hands down easy. You know, I thought that it was Shawnee. Before the last time we did this, Delphi St. John's was right behind them. Those two teams have played since. St. John's won that in a very close game. It's enough to move it up for me, Delphi St. John's.
I have to agree, right? They tackled a box and one. They were down 22-2 at one point in time. And then they come back, and in the second half, Shawnee says, all right, we'll break out the triangle and two on you. No big deal. DSJ, mentally tough, dude. Mm-hmm. I just loved watching them play. I think I'm not sure they beat a senior just because of the change in divisions, but I would love to watch that game.
Absolutely.
That would be a great up and down game, wouldn't it?
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think as a team right now, I like DSJ.
Well, and it's just been hard with Lima Senior's schedule to get a real – I think that they're a very good team. I think they're fantastic.
Yeah.
They're going to make a very deep tournament run. They're going to be good teams. It's just hard right now to look at that schedule and be like, oh, they're the best team. Even if you feel like that – based off of who they've played, it's hard for me to give them that spot right now.
I agree with you.
I can't disagree, fellas. Delphi St. John's. And look at their schedule. They don't back down from anybody.
No, they don't.
They continue to get better. How do you guard them? How do you defend them? You go out on the perimeter. They shoot over top of you. You step out. They go around you. I think that come tournament trail, down into the district finals, into the regionals, they're going to have some problems with some teams with some height.
Oh, sure.
But I think they're going to work their way around it. Yeah.
Yep. A healthy Cam Elwer changes that. And speaking of Cam Elwer, he is my Stally Star of the Week. And I only did that quickly because I had a feeling that everybody else sheet said the same thing. Just the way that he won that game against Shawnee, the way he stepped up, overcame the things they were doing defensively, the confidence that he plays in. Oh. I mean, you know, it was really the only pick for me for this week.
Mine is Kim Elwer. He's a little guard from St. John. No, fellas, I'm no surprise here. I'm going to go with the guy I talked about earlier, Damala Ojo. I love the kid,
man.
I like the kid. I want to get him on the show. I love his athleticism, and I like watching him play. He's an unsung hero for Shawnee. I love watching that Shawnee team play, by the way, guys. I really do. I think they're going to be as good as any team in the area. Can't wait for the Lima Senior Shawnee game. I got that one. I'm on the call for that one. You guys can go with me. I can get you tickets.
Did you buy me tickets? Sweet. I can go somewhere with you guys.
Hey, I was convinced Trevick was going to make that one at the buzzer, too, to send it into overtime. I wanted overtime, right? He had a good look at it. I thought for sure it was going to go. So you went with Ojo.
Yeah, for my star of the week.
I'm going with the guy that shot it over top of him to win the game. I'm going with Mr. Awesome Baby, Cam Bowler. Are you kidding me? He's the all-time scorer at DSJ, baby.
Guys, another great show for the Three Wise Men. Let's do it again next week.
Let's do that.
All right. Thanks a lot for watching.